Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. Welcome back. We're back in the booth. We're back in black. We are Backlick Cinema, the podcast. I'm your host, Zoe. That's Z-O or Z-O to the cinema fans overseas. We're taking a look back at the movies of yesteryear. It's the 79th episode. Thank you for downloading or streaming. We really appreciate it. The reason we started this show was to strengthen the bond between my son, Zach, and me. We watched movies that I loved when I was growing up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I'm going to tell you what Zach thought about the classic movies. At least that's what I normally do. We're not doing that this time because, because Zach was unavailable to watch the movie. So it was just me. I'm only giving you my opinions on this episode. Now, if you like what you're about to hear, please take time to offer a tiny bit of support by giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. You can also share our show on social media. Speaking of which, please follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook and TikTok. You can find the details in the show notes. And now, as promised, if you've been paying attention to previously mentioned social media, we have a very special guest. For the first time in a long time, we're back at interviewing some of my favorite people across the interwebs. Now, you may know her as the Queen Maven of the 80s, a woman who knows her stuff, and she talks about the bedrock of what made the 80s and 90s so unique, and that bedrock is the TV movies. You think you know TV movies, you go on and you switch on to Netflix or Disney Plus and you say, okay, I watched a TV movie. No, you have not. You have not lived until you've gone on ABC television or one of the other major networks when there were only three networks back in the 70s and you wanted to watch your favorite TV show, but instead you get a special graphic, the special tune. Next thing you know, you're smack dab in the middle of a TV movie that preempted your favorite program. A TV movie complete with your favorite TV stars and commercials with the most cheesy and god-awful content that you've seen in a long time. May I introduce to you the woman who watches TV movies so that you don't have to, Beth from Made for TV Movie Club podcast. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm so glad to be doing this. Finally, we have been emailing, texting, DMing for months and months and months. So I'm so glad that you invited me and I'm so happy to be here. And what a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
Yes, I'm out of practice, but I think I nailed it.
You did totally nail it. I feel so good right now. I feel very happy.
Right. So I usually write stuff like that down, but that was totally off the top of my dome. I was conceiving of it as I was setting up. It's like, what am I going to say?
It was awesome.
So I accidentally found you on and browsing the internet. I think maybe we commented on one or another's thing on Twitter or something like that.
Probably.
And I was like, yeah, let me check out this podcast. Let me check it out. And I'm having so much fun because most of these TV movies I have never heard of or seen, but I'm familiar with the concept of the TV movies. So what happened was I started thinking, I was like, well, I've never seen a TV movie. I was never into that. And then I remembered one TV movie that I had seen. I can't remember the name of it, but I had sent it to you. It's about this serial killer who murders people on the interstate with his van. And I remember watching that movie. And the reason I remember it because the thing that he would do was that he had this cassette of this really gnarly guitar solo, right? And he had speakers mounted on the outside of his van somewhere. And whenever he decided he was going to run somebody off the highway, he would slip this cassette into his car. And then he would start. No, I don't even think it was. I think it may have been an 8-track tape.
It probably was. If it was 70s or 80s, yeah.
Kids, as Beth would say, if you want to know what an 8-track tape is, give it a goog. Give it a goog. So he slips the 8-track tape in and then he starts playing this gnarly guitar solo on the speakers. And then he starts just running his target off the road. And I don't know if that was my introduction to TV movies, but that's one that I clearly remembered. And then I started putting them pieces together. And then I remember where there was the Incredible Hulk series of TV movies that they had.
We're
for a
still
while.
Looking. I still have that one on my list too, but we did do the Knight Rider one.
And right.
I had never heard of that one until you told us about it.
Right. There's so much Knight Rider out there.
It is. It's true. David Hasselhoff, he's an institution in the Knight Rider land in the 80s and everything. So it was, that was really fun to watch that movie. And I can't believe I'd never heard of it before.
Right. So have you heard of after Knight Rider, there was that movie. And then they did a series called Team Knight Rider, which he was not on. But it was a series, like it was like five vehicles that were teamed up with drivers, and they would be Team Knight Rider, right? So each vehicle had their own special properties, right? And so they would go out.
I didn't see that one either, but the Knight Rider movie might have been the catalyst for that show, actually.
Yeah.
Because it was supposed to be some kind of spinoff or something. I don't remember, but I never watched anything beyond after David Hasselhoff left. I never watched any reboots or any new iterations of that show. But right. Oh gosh, it just brings back so many memories to watch these TV movies, especially The Knight Rider, because it was such a big part of 80s television.
Right. So your partner's Kirsten?
Yes, my partner's Kirsten. Hi, Case.
I was just
texting with her actually before I came on. So
right. I was gonna ask you about that too. You call her Case. So is this like a nickname or how's that?
Yeah, it is a nickname. When I first met her, so I met her in the very early 90s through another friend of ours, and because I was waitressing at this restaurant and I met this other gal named Shannon, and Shannon and Casey were supposed to go out one night. And then Shannon had to close. So she's like, "You're going out with my friend." And I'm like, "Okay." And ever since then, we've been in constant contact. But her childhood nickname is Casey. So I knew her as Casey, but everybody knows her. Everybody else, like who met her as an adult, knows her as Kirsten. So
right.
It's very confusing for people. And I know I confuse people, but it's hard for me to call her Kirsten because I don't ever call her that.
All right, that's fine. The only reason I had mentioned it is because, and I figured as such, but what's funny is that she knows who her day one friends are. And like we have a lot of, we got a lot of people where it's like we have like our family name and our like outward name that we tell people who we are as an adult, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of how it is. And I mean, we get along so well and we've known each other for so long and we've been through so much together, and doing the podcast with her has just been such a joy because we just get along and we agree on everything, except for maybe I was going to make a joke about the Grizzly Adams movie because we are going to review that coming up, and I didn't want to because I have a whole animal thing in movies. I don't like them, but I watched it yesterday and I was like, she might be right. I kind of really liked it. So
right.
She is right sometimes, even though I don't always want to do a couple of the movies, but it's been really fun. We've had such a good time together. And I think that people can tell that we are very fond of each other when we talk about it, and we hang out a lot too. And we hang out, you know, with our husband. So it's just been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. So what made you decide to start this podcast in particular?
Well, I really wanted to do a true crime podcast. That was sort of our initial thought, because I love true crime. I'm kind of obsessed with it and a missing persons cases. But then I kind of thought, well, there's so many of them and I'm not sure we could do as good of a job as some of them. And so I started sort of pivoting and thinking, well, maybe we can do something with movies because we both love to watch movies, TV. But then I was like, oh, kind of the things we like to talk about, there's a little bit of a saturation there. So let's pivot and talk about something not a lot of other people are talking about. And that's kind of where it came from. And I love TV movies. I loved them growing up. Do you remember, Zoe, when it, like the special event was a TV movie and everybody sat down to watch it, and the next day everybody talked about it and it created a camaraderie. So I think that's kind of how it just sort of came about. And we said, yeah, what we weren't expecting was how difficult some of these movies are to find. That was the one thing that has surprised us a lot and has stopped us from doing some movies, because we can't always find them, and we won't just watch something on YouTube, because then obviously the people who created it are not getting any money for it. They're not, you know what I mean? It's, some of them are illegal bootlegs on YouTube, but they're not pulled down, and that's fine. Everybody do their own thing. But for us, we just couldn't in good conscience do that.
Right, right. Yeah, I noticed that there are a lot, like the Spider-Man one, it's probably only on YouTube. I don't know if I'll be able to find it anyplace else. The one that I mentioned with the serial killer, I don't know if that'll be anyplace else because I couldn't find that anywhere except
for YouTube. Yes, of course. Yeah. And you know, the other thing is that with streaming now, sometimes they come in and out of cycles. So even though it's not showing now, it might be showing, but it really depends on whether it was ever put on, you know, it was ever digitized or anything else like that. So it was a strange thing to realize that, oh, these movies I loved, I might not be able to watch.
Right, right. So where do you find most of your movies?
Well, there are a lot of them we choose if they're streaming, we will say, okay, we're going to prioritize the streaming ones because between the two of us, we have pretty much every streaming channel that there is. I have found a couple of websites that have, that sell the movies. And surprisingly, we found a fair amount that way. And they're about $10 each. So, and they're like, you know, the real deal. So we're not getting bootlegs. There might be a couple that might've been bootlegs, but it's hard to tell. So that's mostly how we do it. Amazon sometimes, but not as often as you would think. But if it came out on DVD, sometimes it's available on Amazon. So those are mostly the channels and the ways we get them. And if we can't find them, we just have to put them on the back burner.
Right, right. Wow. That's it takes a lot of dedication and research on your part.
I love research. It's my jam.
Right, right, right. So wow, that's awesome. Maybe you can share with us where you get some of these, like the websites or the some of the other places where you get your DVDs, like some of the streaming services. Which ones do you tend to find a lot of TV movies on the streaming service?
Well, actually, there's a couple of free ones, like Tubi and Pluto carry a lot of them because they're so old that they're just available for free. Amazon actually has a fair amount of them. And I don't think we've found any on Netflix or Hulu because those focus really on newer and bigger movies. But yeah, Pluto and Tubi are typically the ones. But here's a little trick, though. If you want to find out if a movie is streaming anywhere, all you have to do is look it up on IMDb. And now Yes. It shows you where it is. And now it's even showing, like, check your local channel. So if it's playing on like DirecTV and it's like scheduled, it'll even come up. Now that's brand new. I didn't notice that before. So, and we've done that a couple times too, where we've DVR'd a movie that happened to be on with commercials or something like that, because a TV movie isn't going to lose anything with commercials. They're not going to cut anything because they're made for TV. So.
Right.
So, it's interesting what we've learned, but IMDb has been our best friend, quite honestly.
Right, right.
And now we're both on it because.
Yes. Right.
Hey, check us both out on it.
Right, right. It's a gnarly application process to get on IMDb.
It is, but it's so fun to see your name. And I am telling you, ever since IMDb came out, that's just been kind of my go-to first before I do any other research.
Yeah, yeah. I think I get most of my research from IMDb.
Yeah, I mean, it's got the best information for sure.
Right, right. It's amazing that somebody thought of collecting all of this stuff together in one database. It's awesome.
Yes, it is.
I should probably pay for a subscription.
Yeah, I know, me too. I probably owe them a little money with all the amount of time I've spent on there.
Right. So what are your other interests? You mentioned true crime. You like the TV and movies. So what types of movies do you like?
Oh, gosh. You know what I miss most are the 80s thriller movies. I wish there were more psychological thrillers because those are my very favorite. Netflix has a good amount of them now that I've started like catching up on. But I love, and I'm also obsessed right now with two TV shows. One of them is Kevin Can F Himself, and the other one is Only Murders in the Building. I love those. They're so quirky and strange and so well written. I just love them. So, and as far as movies, I love all genres, but I mostly like the psychological thrillers. But I sure missed going to the movie theater for those 2 years they were closed this last pandemic, right?
Right.
And I've only been back a couple times. I just haven't had a chance, but I miss that experience.
Right, right. Yeah, I do miss a lot of the psychological thrillers. One of my favorites is Silence of the Lambs, of course.
Oh, yeah, I love that one. Right. And, I just saw a picture of it. Now I can't think of it. The Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a great movie. I think that's an epitome of a great 80s sort of psychological thriller. But Silence of the Lambs is a classic. That's such a great movie.
Right, right. But I also like to think of, there was a movie that came out a couple of years ago. I'm trying to think of it. Oh, actually both of these movies. But I'm thinking specifically of Us, the Jordan
Peele. Oh yeah, movie. I have not seen that, but it's on my list and I've heard it's so good.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that like people describe it as, they describe it as a horror movie, but I'm like, this is more of a psychological thriller, right?
I prefer the mind games over the gore. Right. But I mean, I'm not against a good horror movie either. Don't get me wrong. I like horror.
Right. And also Get Out. Get Out is also, to me, is more like a psychological thing. And then he has a movie coming out this year, and it's called Nope. Have you heard of that one?
I don't think so. I might have across some social media or something, but I don't think I've heard of that one.
Right. So Nope stars Daniel Kayala and Kiki Palmer, I think her name is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And they are out in the Midwest, and there's a UFO sighting, and they want to capture an image of the UFO, but the UFO is causing trouble, obviously, because that's what UFOs do.
That's awesome. That sounds like I love that. I'm going to have to take note of that and watch that one.
Right, right. So it's, check out the trailer for that. It's fascinating.
Cool, so, I will.
So let our audience know what your social media handle is, where they can find your podcast. Let them know what the 411 is on Beck and her podcast.
We're on Facebook at Made for TV Movie Club Podcast. We're on Twitter at TV Movie Club Pod 1. Instagram made_for_TV_movie_club. I made that so long. And the easiest way to find us actually is to give us a Goog. You can hashtag us at MFTVMC podcast. And we're on all the podcast apps, Anchor, Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Deezer, iHeartRadio. So Spotify, just give us a Goog and you'll find us.
Yes. And she's right. I tried giving it a Goog and it worked perfectly.
and I've even started putting the hashtag in all the episodes so that like those will come up too if you just Goog the hashtag.
Right, right. Absolutely. So I'll absolutely have all of those links in the show notes.
Thank you.
So let us move right along.
Oh, I'm so excited. This just brought back so many great memories. I mean, there's nothing like a really good 80s comedy to just make you happier than you were when you started 2 hours earlier.
Awesome. Let us pause and give it a breath, and then we'll be right back with the opening credits. And we're back. We are back to talk about one of the most fun movies that came out in the 1980s. And that movie that me and Beth watched was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
So Beth, why don't you tell us what happened? Give us a overview of the movie.
Two seemingly dumb teens set off on a quest to prepare the ultimate historical presentation with the help of a time machine.
Yeah, that's that whole thing. And that was provided by IMDb. This movie was released February 17th, 1989, produced by DEG, De Laurentiis Film Partners. I think I pronounced that right. Interscope Communications.
De Laurentiis, yeah.
It has too many eyes.
Right.
Interscope Communications, it grossed over $40 million in the US and Canada and over on an $8.5 million budget. That's profit right there. It's all profit.
That's a big profit right there. Yeah. I mean, I remember it was a huge hit. I remember everybody like on Monday morning, did you go see that? Did you see it? And, you know, everybody went and saw it because, well, by then Keanu Reeves was a pretty big star, but I mean, it was just such a fun movie.
Right. It was definitely a movie that came out at the right time.
Exactly.
Right when I was right when I was about to graduate high school.
Right. I had graduated a couple years prior, but I was in college. So, I mean, it was completely normal to go see a movie like that, even in college, even adults, everybody loved it. It was a great movie.
Right. Right. So this movie was starring Keanu Reeves. Well, can I speak now? I know words. Keanu Reeves as Ted Theodore Logan. He's we all know the movies that Keanu Reeves been in. He's such a huge star. So what I normally do is I talk about the movie they have been, but who doesn't know what movie Keanu Reeves been in? So I'm going to talk about the movies that he's going to be in. He's going to be in DC League of Super Pets. That's in pre-production. The Devil in White City and Berserker. I think those are all in pre-production. So sound very awesome. Interesting. I think The Devil in the Blue, The Devil in the White City, I think that's a novel. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, I think it might have actually been a true crime book or something. Is that the one about there's a serial killer, I think, in Chicago? I think that's it. You're right. It was based on a book.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've only seen the cover of it, and I see the cover everywhere. So
yeah, it was a pretty big book, and I know I read it, but it was quite, I mean, the book came out, I want to say 20 years ago. It's been a long time it's been out, so, but I'm pretty sure I read it. If it was true crime, I'm sure I read it.
And I have no idea what Berserker is. I think I may have heard it might be related to a video game, but I did absolutely no research. I was like, oh, there's another one. And I typed it in there.
and you said it right, even though it's just letters.
Right. So kids, if you want to find it, it's B-R-Z-R-K-R, Berserker.
Yeah.
All right. Let who's next?
Alex Winter plays Bill S. Preston Esquire. He was in Death Wish 3, Saul of the Moment, which is a cartoon, and one of my other favorite 80s, because Kiefer Sutherland was in it, The Lost Boys.
Yes. Another movie that I had not seen.
You haven't seen it? You have to see it. You have to go see it right now. And I actually heard, I think they're making a TV series about it now.
Yeah.
Did I hear that? Yeah.
I think they probably are. But I definitely need to go and watch that.
It's a great movie. You got to see it. And I'll come back on and we'll talk about it when you do.
Awesome. That sounds great. I've been thinking about doing a series of episodes where I'm watching movies that I've never seen, right? Because this is a movie that Zach has never seen, but I want to do like some episodes of movies that I've never seen that I should have seen, right? Because it's like, there are certain movies that you should see. So,
and The Lost Boys is one of them. That's your homework. I don't want to talk to you again until you see it. No, I'm just kidding.
So up next is George Carlin as Rufus. He's been in Dogma, Jersey Girl, and The Prince of Tides.
Terry Camilleri plays Napoleon, and he was on The Truman Show, Knowing, and Superman 3.
Dan Shore played Billy the Kid. He's been in Tron, Black Moon Rising, and Air Force One.
Tony Steedman plays Socrates, or Socrates. He was in Citizen Smith, which was a TV show, Scrooged, and Iron Man, the cartoon.
Rod Loomis as Freud. He was in Body Double, The Beastmaster, The Bold and the Beautiful, the TV series.
Oh, yeah, that's a great show. Al Long played Genghis Khan. He was in Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, and Big Trouble in Little China. I mean, those are big movies.
Yeah, he is like, I'm always pleased whenever he shows up.
I know. He's so great. He's great. He's great in everything.
Right. Lane Wheedland, she was played Joan of Arc. She was in Clue, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and The Pyrex Glitch.
And she also, for those of you who might have a keen eye, she was in The Go-Go's, the band, The Go-Go's.
Oh, I did not know that.
I only remember her because I loved her so much. She looks like Winona Ryder too. I think she was their drummer. I'm not 100% sure about that.
Right.
So Robert V. Baron played Abraham Lincoln. He was in Lupin III, The Castle of, oh, I wish Casey were here for this, Cagliostro.
That sounds Robotech. Good to me.
Yeah, I mean, she's our pronouncer. Captain Harlock and the Queen of a Thousand Years.
Yes, these are all anime series. And I think Lupin III, I think that's actually Lupin the Third. I think that's how you say
sorry.
That. It's not your fault. It's an obvious. Anybody seeing that would say the same thing. But So it's not like the third in the series. It's that's the name of the character Loop, or the name of the series, the cartoon series.
Okay.
Lupin the Third.
I've not heard of it.
Yeah. So I think there's like a Netflix or some streaming service that have taken the name Lupin and have made a series with it.
Okay.
Lupin the Third is like a well-beloved anime series.
Okay.
And obviously we know about Robotech, and some people have heard of Captain Harlock.
Yes. I have, but the other one, no.
Right, right. Moving right along, it's Clifford David as Beethoven. He's been in The Exorcist 3, Signs, and Kenzie.
Hal London Jr. played Captain Logan. He was in Eraserhead, The Artist, and Pee-wee's Big Holiday.
And Bernie Casey as Mr. Ryan. He was in Never Say Never Again, Revenge of the Nerds, and The Mouth of Madness. Whenever I see Bernie Casey, I know things are about to get serious.
Yeah, right. Amy Stock played Missy, or Mom. She was in Summer School, great movie with Mark Harmon and Amber Rose.
J. Patrick McNamara. He was Mr. Preston. He was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind and 1941.
Diane Franklin was Princess Joanna, and she was in Better Off Dead. Oh, did you see that one? I hope you watched that one.
We did an episode on it. That's one of my favorite movies. I had to include her on the list just because she was in Better Off Dead.
Exactly. I totally get it.
Right. And lastly is Kimberly Cates. She played Princess Elizabeth, and she was principally on Eek the Cat. Now, I used to love that cartoon. And
saw that one.
Yeah. So it's kind of a gnarly cartoon to watch. It kind of reminds me of Bill the Cat from the Doonesbury cartoon. She was kind of like
it.
That.
Yeah, got it.
Also, I don't know if you've ever seen The Suicide Squad, the second movie.
I'm pretty sure I have seen that one. Yes. I'm almost certain it was The Suicide Squad I've seen.
It was the one that featured this weasel character that drowned almost immediately in the first part of the movie.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that one.
Right. So anyway, there's a weasel character. Some people thought it was a werewolf. It was kind of like a giant weasel. Right.
Okay.
And it was in prison. So it went out with the Suicide Squad. But that character was based on Bill the Cat. Right.
Okay. So, got it.
George Carlin as Rufus. So he wasn't in the movie a lot. He was in a lot less than I thought he was, but did you ever listen to his comedy?
I love George Carlin. And when I rewatched it, I feel like I remember him being in the movie more. And I wish he had been, because he was just so talented. I mean, everybody loved George Carlin. He was funny and he was good. And he was so cute in this movie. I just was like, oh, where is he?
Right,
it would have been fun to have him in more. But I mean, there probably wasn't room with all the other characters.
Right. He was basically in and out.
Yeah, so, but he's a great actor, and he was a great comedian. His stand-up was so good.
Right. Oh, man, I loved his stand-up.
Yeah, me too.
So me too. Who directed this movie?
This movie was directed by Stephen Herrick, who also directed Mr. Holland's Opus, The Three Musketeers, and Critters.
Yeah.
I have not seen Critters, but I saw Musketeers and Opus. Those were good movies.
I should have put the dates, but Three Musketeers, that was the 90s movie with, what's his name?
Matt Damon was in that, right? Wasn't he? Was Matt Damon
I don't think it was Matt Damon, but I can't remember anybody's name.
Charlie Sheen, thank you.
And correct. Kiefer Sutherland, I think, was in there too.
Yes, yes, you're right. And, I don't know why I thought Matt Damon was in
there. Right, right. And the kid that played D'Artagnan was, almost got it. He's in CIS, one of the NCIS, can't remember his name. Chris, it's close.
Oh, nope. He played Robin, Batman and Robin. Oh my gosh, are we going to do this all day? I know NCIS LA, what is his name, Chris? Yeah. Anyway, Robin.
Yeah, the guy that played Robin in Batman and Robin, that guy.
Oh my gosh, so, I can't believe you're both. Yeah. I can't remember, but his face is right in my face.
Right, right.
CISLA, why can't I remember?
Right, we'll get it by the end of the episode. Anyways, this movie was written by Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon. Chris Matheson, he has written a goofy movie, Mr. Wong, and The Wise Ones. And Ed Solomon had written Men in Black, and now You See Me Too, and levity. So, you know, they've written some good movies.
And yeah, those are good.
I think that a majority of the screenwriters do write some pretty decent stories. It's just that, you know, when you pile on like the director and the screenwriter and all these other, and the producers, they kind of change the story up. I think Bill and Ted was a lot different than what we got in the theaters. And I think I wrote that in the trivia. So you'll see, I don't remember what I wrote.
Well, the music was by David Newman, who wrote the music for West Side Story, The Nutty Professor, Scooby-Doo. So I'm assuming the original West, well, I mean, I don't know how much the music.
Yeah, this, I'm sorry, that. That this is the new West Side Story, the one. That
okay, the new out. One. Okay, so right. That makes sense. Okay, so then, because there were new songs in the new one, I think, correct?
I
don't know.
Sure.
I haven't seen
it. I've never seen the original. I haven't seen this one. I just know that was a very impactful movie and based on a very good stage play. I've not seen anything of it. Only know that it was important because it was pushed upon me when I was growing up.
Okay. Well, The Nutty Professor was Eddie Murphy, one of his great 80s movies that he
right,
did.
Right,
that
right.
was a great, that was a good, I mean, he really didn't make a bomb ever, Eddie Murphy. Did he? Maybe he did, but I don't remember. I remember liking everything he did. Maybe they weren't all great, but they weren't they weren't bad.
Right. There were some movies that definitely didn't reach the levels of popularity as something like The Nutty Professor. Like The Golden Child wasn't.
I liked that one though.
Right.
I still thought it was a good, even though I don't think that one did well in the theaters and people didn't like it. I think now, if you look back historically, I think his body of work would be pretty solid looking back today.
Absolutely. So that's it for the opening credits. And if you're enjoying the show, remember that you can get t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, jerseys, and more at our refurbished website, backlickcinema.com/shop. Check weekly for new designs. I know you've been checking and there haven't been new designs. I get that. This is a one-man show over here. I'll leave the links to the teespring.com and the teepublic.com in case there's anything from there that you like. And don't forget, the pint glasses are key, and you can only get those at Teespring. I actually sent a couple of pint glasses to some friends over at the Watching It podcast, and they like them. So if they like them, you'll like them. I guarantee it. I'm like the guy from that commercial. Anyway, take a pause for a minute, and we're going to talk about our favorite parts. And we're back, and we are going to talk about our favorite parts from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Beth, why don't you start us off?
Okay, so I think one of my very, very favorite parts was Napoleon at the water park. I mean, that was just so silly, goofy, and there wasn't anything not to love about it. He's like pushing kids out of the way, and he's having the time of his life at that water park, and it was delightful.
Yeah, Napoleon's character in general was kind of fun because he's kind of, unlike all the other historical figures that he brought back, he's basically kind of a bully and a villain, and he's bullying kids. You know, he's out with the kids and he's bullying little kids everywhere he goes, or you know, have this threatening look, and he's always speaking French to people, but people don't understand what he's saying, so now he's frustrated. So I'm glad they didn't have him there speaking English. So that was really cool. That was where he's going around basically trying to bully people around a foreigner in a foreign land. One of my favorite parts is the whole gag with your mom's cute dude, right?
Remember when we were freshmen and she was a senior?
right. He's like, remember I tried to ask her out for the prom? He's like, so it was like that. Ted was the one that was saying that. Ted was always like, and this is Bill's mom. So Ted's like, your mom's cute dude. Your mom's too cute dude. And Bill is always like, shut up, Ted. Shut up, Ted.
And Bill is just like, hi, Missy. I mean, mom.
Right. So to explain it to the audience, if you haven't seen Bill and Ted, so they don't explain the whole backstory, but apparently Bill's mom was a senior when Bill and Ted were freshmen. And somewhere along the line, after Missy graduated from high school, Bill's dad married Missy. So now his height, the girl that was basically his classmate is now his stepmother, right? And so, and they knew each other, right? Because he's calling her Missy, but now he has to correct himself and say mom, right? Right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's so funny the way he does it. It's just, I think that's kind of the funniest part of this movie is that they just say things that are so funny, but they're so straight-faced. And, hey, Missy, I mean mom.
Right, right, right.
And he
right.
says it throughout the entire movie. And every time he says it, I laugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every single time. That line is not funny.
And another thing about it is that that's the only point of contention between Bill and Ted, because they're best friends. They love each other. They play together. It's like they agree on everything. They're so dumb that they got the same level of intelligence that they complement each other in their yes. dumbness. So it's like when they go to like the Quickie Mart and they're trying to study for their history test that they have to pass, and they're asking random people history questions because they don't know. It's like that's and they compliment each other, but this one point about Bill's mom that threatens to rip their partnership apart.
it's so cute, and it's just so like silly. And I mean, that's the thing about the movie, it's just silly, but it's so good because like in true 80s comedy style, they're the underdogs, and you're just rooting for them the moment they start talking about needing Eddie Van Halen. And
right.
Was I the only one that was kind of hoping there was one? Like a little Eddie Van Halen? Wouldn't that have been cool to have them like at the very end or something? I wonder if they tried and they just couldn't, but that would have been really cool.
That would have been cool. So what's another one of your parts?
I also loved the mall montage because first of all, we love the mall montage in our 80s movies. Usually the ones we see are like girls running around the mall looking for clothing. But in this case, it was Genghis Khan destroying the sporting goods store.
Right.
Beethoven jamming on the keyboards. Joan of Arc pushing the aerobics instructor out of the way. I mean, right. it was just, I don't know. It just kind of had like a silly 80s feel about it that I loved. I don't know if I would have appreciated it as much in the 80s as I did rewatching it now.
right. Yeah, that was definitely a fun sequence when basically you had all the historical figures just doing the most, right?
at a shopping mall. It was awesome. Right. I just thought it was, I mean, when you watch it, when I watch it, that's the one thing. And I'm sure, Zoe, you've kind of had this happen too. Like when you go back and watch these older movies, you just have such a different appreciation for them than you could possibly have had when you're watching them. Or like, I mean, at the time, I think I was probably 19 when it came out. You just, and you don't know what the future's going to bring. Like today, it's like, how much time do you need to spend to explain to people, like if you had your son on or my kids, what's a phone booth? My kids have no idea what a phone booth is.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
But I love that because it really is kind of like just an archaeological find. Like, what is that? Let's talk about the phone booth, you know?
Right, right.
And back then it was just like a silly way to move through time.
So another one of our parts is there's a running gag with Socrates' name that you alluded to earlier. So they keep like I think Bill asks, where do I find Socrates? And Ted says, look under Socrates. Look under Socrates.
And then I think they introduced him as Socrates too, right at the end. I'm pretty sure they did. And he's just like, has no idea what they're talking about anyway.
Right. And they find a way to communicate, which is cool. Even like when they first met Socrates, it was real cool. And so he's like, they, and then speaking of Days of Our Lives, Socrates, he comes up with the title for Days of Our Lives. Like sands through the hourglass. And he loves these guys because it's like, yeah, they get it. Right. That's why he goes with them to the phone booth.
Right. I loved that line because I had forgotten about it, but I loved the soap opera Days of Our Lives. I don't watch it anymore, but oh man, I watched it all the time back then. So that just really hit harder. It was so funny.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
just, and it's like, that's the thing about this movie. There's so many little things throughout that I think some people might get, some people might not get, but it's all just in good fun.
Right. I even like how they're collecting the historical figures. They just see one that they think that's, you know, significant in history, and they're like, let's bag them, right?
Yeah. And then just throw them in the phone booth with us because somehow magically eight people fit in that little phone booth.
That's funny. I don't think I put it in the trivia, but I think the world record for people in the phone booth is 24.
I can't even imagine how you can get that many people. Don't you remember? Like, I remember with my friends, we'd be like squeezed two in there to like call a boy and like meet us at the dance or like, you know, trying to call our parents or whatever. But I can't believe you can fit that many people. They must have planned that out well and maybe put them in from the top.
it's always college kids that are doing it. So they're all very healthy, quite skinny, squeezing in there. Like
you'd have to be to get 24 people. They'd all weigh 90 pounds.
Right. So what's another part you like?
I think that the scenes that George Carlin were in were my very favorite scenes of the movie. I mean, and they kind of like, you know, were the bookends for the movie itself, obviously, because he was in the beginning and at the end. But I just, and that he broke the fourth wall at the end of that movie, because in the 80s, sometimes they did, you know, Ferris Bueller did, but when like he talked to write directly to the audience in the last line. And I liked that. I'm not sure that I would have loved it in the 80s, but I liked it. I liked George Carlin's presence.
Right.
He was like the straight man to the entire insanity going on around him, which is funny because he's a comedian. And so it's kind of a play on himself, I think.
Right. I really enjoyed their heist at the police station where the historical figures, they all get jailed. This is after them all. And they all get put in jail. Ted's father is a police officer. I guess he's a detective or whatever. And he can't get through his father. He can't get past his father to get to the history people. So what they do is that they remind themselves to do something in the past, and then that was something that they should have done in the past. The next thing you know, it appears in the future, right? So they say, well, remember the keys, because throughout the movie, Ted's father can't find his keys. And then what had happened was that in the past, they had stolen his keys, and then they put it behind a sign, and then suddenly they had the keys. Or they was like, remember the tape recorder, and then suddenly a tape recorder starts playing, right? And so
it was clever. Yeah,
I really like that. It was almost like they had superpowers. They just remind themselves to do something in the past, and it would appear instantly in the time that they were in. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was really clever. And I like that when they're like, where would we have put them then? Oh, no, here they are. I guess we did take the keys after all.
Right.
And I taking them the whole time. I thought that was really funny. But I thought that was really funny, too. You're right. At the police station. And that was after the mall montage where they were all got arrested because they were just basically destroying the mall, kind of.
Right.
In a good way.
Right. So what did you think of the finale when they finally got all of their historical figures at the school?
Well, I think it was so classic 80s when they were like, okay, well, we didn't have one, so we're done. And you're like, oh, no, they're not going to make it. And then the lights go out and it was like this grand entrance. And it was so classic 80s way of doing like an ending to a comedy, kind of Revenge of the Nerds sort of did the same thing. And I loved it. I loved the way they ended it. I think it was very satisfying.
Right. Now, how they opened it with Billy the Kid opening fire inside school, that was a little triggering.
They would not, there's a lot of movie scenes and a lot of movies they probably wouldn't do if they were to do it today. And you're right about that. That would be, they would never be able to film that today.
Right.
You know, especially like, given what's been happening most recently. And it's very sad, but you're right. That would not fly at all.
It was like, I forgot about that. But I was like, whoa, triggering, right?
Yeah, I completely forgot it. There was a lot of things I forgot because I'm not sure that this one doesn't play a lot on like DirecTV or anything. So I'm not sure that I mean, it's streaming on Amazon, but I'm not sure I've seen it in 25, maybe 30. I mean, I may not have seen it up since it like hit HBO after it hit theaters in the early 90s.
Right. I haven't seen it since the 90s myself. But that was and the reason I wanted to watch these movies, I wanted to watch this one in the sequel because of Face the Music just came out. So I was like, well, I got to watch these movies so I can go and watch Face the Music because I know that's got to be awesome. Right.
Right. And then I think they did make, I mean, didn't they make a fairly recent Bill and Ted? I haven't seen it, but now I want to.
Yeah, that's like Face the Music.
Okay. Yeah. So, but that, because then there was the Bogus Journey too, right?
Yeah, that came out.
That was the 90s though, right?
Right. Okay. That came out almost soon after the first one.
Okay.
And because it made like six times its budget. So it was like immediately they got to start writing the sequel.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if I've ever seen the Bogus Journey.
Right.
Sure. I don't know if I have.
I haven't. I think I've seen bits and pieces of it, but I never watched the whole movie. So all I know is that they're supposed to meet death, and that's the most I know about that movie.
Okay. Yeah, so. Me too. But I'm going to watch it because I think it was also streaming.
Yes.
I think I saw that. So I'm going to watch that. And I want to watch Face the Music, which I wanted to see when it came out, but I just haven't got, I have a long list of books to read and TV shows and movies to watch. And it seems like old TV movies just seem to always get in the top of the list.
Right. It's so hard to get this because there's so much content out there. It's hard to get through everything.
It is, but it's good. It's all good. Like, we could have bigger problems, right?
Right. It's a good problem to have.
Right.
But Face the Music. I actually bought Face the Music as part of a 3-pack. So there was a sale. So I bought like all three movies. I got the Bill and Ted trilogy.
Okay.
And yeah. And there was also a Bill and Ted cartoon. Did you ever see that?
No, but I remember there was one. I mean, any kind of big movie like that kind of had its own cartoon.
Right.
Back then. It was kind of the way it went. I mean, Ghostbusters had cartoon and, you know, so I mean, it makes sense that they did. I never saw it though.
Right. I think I've seen maybe a couple of episodes.
I remember it being out, but I never saw it.
So do you have any more favorite parts that you want to talk about?
I think just the Napoleon, like with the, when he gets kicked out of the bowling alley and the kids are like, let's ditch this guy. And then right. later on, you know, when they're like, what do you mean you ditched him? He was a jerk.
Right. Exactly.
I just thought that was funny. I don't know why the Napoleon just got under my skin, and it was funny. I don't know. So probably some of my favorite scenes were the ones he was in, because they were just silly.
Right.
I mean, that's all good.
Right. I enjoy the silliness of Bill and Ted. It's just how they talked, you know, how clueless they were. It was just fun. Right.
So,
I really enjoy the whole premise of the movie is that somehow these guys are the basis for the future society. So they send somebody back in time to not to save them, because their lives are not in danger. It is to keep them together so they can form the, they don't have to break up the Wild Stallion. So the Wild Stallion becomes such incredible influence that they influence the entire world. And then the mantra of the world of the future is be excellent to each other, right?
Be excellent to each and other, yes.
They have their salute is the air guitar salute, right? So everything. So it's just awesome. And I really enjoyed the premise of the whole movie. So it's really fun. It's a really fun watch. If you haven't seen Bill and Ted, Excellent Adventure, go check it out. I would recommend all three movies. Yeah.
Yes, I would. And the fashion was so avant-garde back then. I think that, except for maybe with the phone booth, people might have to give that a gook if they don't know what one is. That movie, and the Billy the Kid at the end. But otherwise, that movie is held up really well. And I think it's just, I mean, I think it's relatable today.
Right. What I really like, the last thing is how Ted finally got Socrates' name right at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And how Sigmund Freud was psychoanalyzing Ted and talking about how, you know, Ted's father is basically living through Ted, right? So
yeah,
trying to push his own expectation through Ted. And Ted gets up, he's like, whoa, because Ted is on the couch on stage, right? And so he asks Bill, if he had any issues that you wanted to work out. And Bill says, I just have a slight edible complex.
that was probably the funniest line in the movie though.
Yeah, that was
it, if you caught it, like, I'm not sure, you know, like that's one of those things where you almost, it's a thinker.
Right,
if you don't know who Freud is or Frude, I think they called him Frude too, right?
Right.
Just pronouncing the names, that was funny.
Yeah, so, he said edible instead of Oedipus. So that was fun.
It was funny.
All right. So that was fun. I'm glad that we was able to enjoy this movie, able to you get out and express our love for this movie, talk about our favorite parts. Now we're going to talk about some of the behind the scenes stuff in our final segment. Well, actually, it's not the final segment. It's just the next segment. The next segment is the trivia segment.
Alex Winter claimed that he gets two types of letters from teachers, positive ones from history teachers for encouraging students to learn about history and negative ones from English teachers for affecting the way students speak.
Right. So that's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, that is. That's very interesting.
In the original script, the Time Machine was a 1969 Chevy van. Filmmakers thought it was too similar to the Back to the Future in 1985. So they changed it to a phone booth, apparently unconcerned that Doctor Who from 1963 uses a police telephone box as a time machine.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's so. Doctor Who is much bigger today in the United States. So maybe that's why, because Doctor Who back in the 80s that show had a cult following in the United States, but it wasn't mainstream like it is today. So maybe
probably
that's why,
not.
You know.
Right, probably not. But it's only so many things that you can use as a time machine.
Exactly. Right? You can get three people in it, right? I mean, what else can you do? I don't even know. I couldn't even think. It would have to be some kind of closet type thing.
Yeah. That'd be the last thing, is a wardrobe. Like, but then that's the line of Witch in a Wardrobe. So you're running out of stuff.
Oh, yeah. They've already been taken. Let's just pick something else.
Right.
The phone booth. Time Machine was given away as a contest prize by Nintendo Power Magazine, which was promoting Bill and Ted's Excellent Video Game Adventure in 1991. That's cool.
Is that, but still now lost to history.
I hope somebody whoever has it today understands what they have.
Right.
I have a great place for that to go. If you have it and you want to get rid of it, I'll keep it for you. I have a spot right in my other room here.
Right. Make sure it's tall enough so it doesn't damage the antenna.
Exactly, right? I don't want to fix that because I don't have enough chewing gum.
Right. In the film, Bill and Ted claim that Edward Van Halen in their band, well, they need Edward Van Halen in their band to make it better. But the film was released, he jokingly said that he would have joined their band if they had asked.
So I wish they had. It would have been so cool if they had had a cameo with him at the end. When Napoleon finishes his water slide presentation at the end of the movie, Ted looks up and says, "I don't think it's going to work." He's actually diagramming Napoleon Bonaparte's most disastrous defeat, the French invasion of Russia.
Right. And it's funny how mad he got when Ted told him, "I don't think that's going to work." He slammed his crock or whatever on the board and upset all the little playing pieces. He was so mad.
Yeah, that was funny. He was just so mad.
Right. So, and it's funny that, you know, he explained the whole strategy in French, but because he had a game board with all the game pieces. And then he also had like a whiteboard. He drew the diagram of his eventual defeat. And so I guess people could follow along, right? So originally the plot was to have Bill and Ted visit and accidentally cause all of history's greatest tragedies, including the sinking of the Titanic and the crash of the Hindenburg, which I think probably would have worked. I'm pretty sure.
If they played it right, that would have totally worked.
Right.
Oh, in 2010, the city of San Dimas, California, celebrated 50 years of incorporation. The celebration slogan was "San Dimas, 1960 to 2010, an excellent adventure." That's cute.
That is cute. And in case you didn't realize, folks, San Dimas is the setting of, or that's where Bill and Ted grew up. And now we know it's an actual city. It's not someplace that they made up.
Yeah. I mean, I actually didn't. Usually I look that stuff up and I didn't. I just assumed it was a real city because California has so many cities. I just assumed, oh, yeah, that rings true.
Right. Bill and Ted began as a stand-up act in which the characters would focus or discuss current events without knowing what they were talking about. It originally included a third character named Bob, but the comedian who played him lost interest after a few performances. I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, me too. I wonder if there's any, I'll have to look, I'll have to do some research and see if there's any existing footage of that. Probably right. not, but you never know.
Right.
In April 2013, Alex Winter called casting George Carlin a very happy accident. They were going after serious people first, like Sean Connery, and someone had the idea way after we started shooting of George. The whole movie was a happy accident. No one thought it would ever see the light of day. I actually think Sean Connery would have also been a good choice.
Yeah,
maybe because of the accent, and he didn't do comedy. He would have been a great straight man to that movie. But yeah. I mean, I'm glad they picked George Carlin because
yeah, actually I remember him in the, I don't know if you remember the film version of the Avengers where he was in.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was one of the goofiest things that he's done, right? So it's not, and even he kind of had like comedic moments in the Indiana Jones and what was it, the last one?
Yeah, that's true. He did. But all the Indiana Jones kind of had some like silly lines.
Right. Right.
You're right. I had forgotten about that. We just reviewed a MacGyver movie called The Lost City of Atlantis, which was basically a TV movie version of Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I've been thinking about that series a lot this weekend. So
right.
I also love Harrison Ford. So I forgot Sean Connery. I just forget all the great movies he was in.
Right. The funniest line that Henry Jones says in the movie. What's that movie called? I'm only calling it Indiana Jones and
Was it The Last Crusade? I think it was The Last Crusade.
No, not that one. It was hold on. Yeah, you're right. Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. You're absolutely right.
I think River Phoenix was in that one too at the very beginning.
Right.
I think
he plays
a young Indiana Jones, right?
That is correct. And okay. That's where we learn his fierce names. But the funniest line in that movie was when Henry Jones Sr. says, "She talks in her sleep."
Oh, gosh, I forgot about that. I have to watch that. I got to put that back on my list.
Right. So moving right along. According to Alex Winter, Bill and Ted's iconic arm gesture, holding one hand on the chest while raising the other arm in the air, was a spontaneous reaction as it felt natural to him and Keanu Reeves.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It looks cool when they both do it together.
Yes.
And it looks spontaneous. It's like it actually fits them.
Yeah, so I think so.
His instincts were right on.
Right on, yeah. The German dub has gained cult status in Germany. It is credited with coining the words Hoshi for dude and, oh geez, Granatenstark for excellent. The quote, "be excellent to each other," is replaced with a more philosophical line, which translates as colorful and excellent is the being. Oh, I kind of like that. Some of the German dubbed catchphrases like Volkan and Hoshi became so popular that they became part of the language. Additionally, some scenes contain either altered or extra dialogue, such as the scene when Bill and Ted meet their future selves. In the German version, they asked, "if you guys are really us, which famous toothpick or celebrity are we thinking about right now?" And their future selves reply, "Arnold Schwarzenegger." I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. That was another awesome scene when they meet each other. That was so fun.
Yes, that was really cool.
So Joan is often addressed as Joan of Arc. In reality, she never used that title during her lifetime and was not from a town called Arc. Ooh. During her trial, she called herself Joan the Maid, and she did not know her surname. She later explained her father was Jacques de Arc, and her mother was Isabel Romay, adding that her hometown daughters often took their mother's surname. In late medieval France, family surnames were little used.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
I did not know that about Joan of Arc. I truly don't know a ton about her, so I'm glad to have some more history knowledge.
Right.
According to Alex Winter, filming in the phone booth was so unpleasant that he and Keanu Reeves nicknamed it the Death Box. I imagine it was probably not very like spacious and probably was warm and
right. Yeah, I can imagine that was pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
Finally, Bill says Let's reach out and touch someone before they use the phone booth for the first time. It's an old slogan from the Bell System phone company associated with the advertising campaign that introduced touch tone telephones in the late 1960s. It resulted in massive sales, which coincided with a major upgrade to telephone systems throughout the US and eventually the world.
Yeah, because, that was a well-known phrase.
Right, because before the buttons, there was the rotary dial, and that was if you had a particularly long telephone number that had a bunch of nines and ones, then yeah, those were definitely hard to use, right?
It took a long time to dial certain people. If you had nines, like I had a friend whose her phone number had sevens and nines, and it took a long time to dial that number.
Right, right. So yeah.
And there was no like redial button back then.
There was a lot of creature comforts that we had missed. So that's it. That's it for the trivia. We are going to take a pause, and then we'll come back with we're going to see what the critics thought. And we're back. We're going to talk about what the critics thought. The critics on Rotten Tomatoes gave this an 82%. The audience score was 76%. And IMDb reviews have it a 6.8/10. So that's not too bad. It's about what you would expect from this movie. Why don't you give us a little detail on what some of these people thought?
Sure. Carrie Rickey from the Philadelphia Inquirer said, though its one-liners elicit the occasional chortle, when Bill and Ted don medieval armor, there's an obligatory heavy metal joke. The film doesn't engage because its heroes don't engage with the historical characters.
Yeah, she's so wrong. There's so much engagement.
Yeah, she's totally wrong. She obviously didn't like the movie.
Right, right. She did not understand how they engaged with the characters.
They totally engaged with them.
She's confused. So
yeah, I think so. Maybe she didn't watch it. I don't know. Right. And Colette Maud from Time Out says, this is extremely silly, good-natured, superficial stuff. A lot depends on whether you take Bill and Ted's unique lingo, which contorts surfers' expressions, and their gormless behavior. I don't know what gormless means, but I like this. She's completely every way.
Right.
This is correct. Right. I like that one.
Yeah, she threw us off with that with the source. Yeah.
Gormless. I don't know what that is.
She threw us off with the source word. But yes, I believe she's correct. You got to take this. We got to meet this movie where it's at, and it's in a good place.
Right.
So yeah. James Plath from Movie Metropolis wrote, the humor is light and lightheaded, so much so that you'd have to say it's a stoner movie with no pot. He's almost right. I'll give like half credit for what he says there. It's like, I don't fully agree, but I kind of see where he's coming from.
I feel like when it came out on DVD, there were probably a lot of people that did smoke pot and watch this movie often.
Absolutely. So finally, we have Marjorie Bergenton from Austin Chronicle. She wrote, as these high school goofballs travel back in time to score some heavy dates like Napoleon, Socrates, and Billy the Kid for their history presentation, they wrote themselves into a teen movie pantheon. Yes, that's absolutely right.
Agreed. I like all of them except for that lady from the Inquirer. She's just wrong. She needs to watch it again and write it now.
I agree. She is absolutely wrong. So that's it for our critics. And finally, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, as of this recording, is available on Amazon Prime Video. That's it for today. Since this movie is really the first, I'm reading something that I was supposed to erase. My bad.
Oops. I do that all the time.
So, that's it for the day. The next movie we're going to check out, Short Circuit, which is currently available on Showtime. And I think I have another guest for that. I will let you know on social media next week. You can follow us on Twitter, TikTok, at Backlit Cinema, or on Facebook or Instagram, at Backlit Cinema Podcast. And check there for updates. Don't forget, you can contact us with any questions or comments or suggestions at fanmail@backlitcinema.com. Beth, do you have any more plugs you want to put out there?
No, just remember to give us a Goog, hashtag us at MFTVMC Podcast, and you will find us. And I hope you do. Come and check us out and engage with us on social media. I love that. I just got a really nice email this morning from this woman in England who said she likes the show, but can't find some of the movies, which she's not wrong about, but still likes the show because you don't have to watch our movie. You don't have to watch the movie. We tell you the whole rundown. So just check it out. Even if you don't know, if you've ever seen the movie, come check us out.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
One last time, if you like this show, then please help us grow. To do this, you can subscribe to the show, rate us, or write a review on Spotify, Podchaser.com, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. I know that you've enjoyed our guests, so please listen to Made for TV Movie Club podcast. Believe me, it matters. Be safe, share a movie from yesteryear with your family, hug your loved ones, and be excellent to each other.
Be excellent and party on,
dudes.